It is March 6th. We're learning Masechet Bava Kamma at Shari Tefillah. We're in Chapter 4, Mishnah 1. And actually, before we even look at the Mishnah, we're going to look at some preparatory material. So, my source sheet suggests that we first look at Chapter 1, Mishnah 4, before we even know what today's Mishnah is about.
Chapter 1, Mishnah 4?
Yeah, very end of Chapter 1.
The
very end of chapter 1.
Shnei Kadarim.
That's chapter 2. The very end of chapter 1. There's only four Mishnayot in chapter 1. Look at the last line, actually.
Oh!
Last section of last Mishnah of chapter 1. Mary Beth, you have it there?
I'm not sure that I do.
So it's only four Mishnayot into.
Okay, here's four on 27, 28, the end of four.
28.
Okay. Yes.
So okay. What it says there, about 11, 12 words from the end, It says, Ma bein tam limu'ad. What is between tam limu'ad? What's the difference between tam and mu'ad? Ela shahatam mishalem hatsi nezek migufo. Rather that the tam pays hatsi nezek from its body, v'muad mishalem nezek shalem min ha'aliyah, and the muad pays nezek shalem, full damages, not from the body, but from the aliyah. Means one interpretation is anything, even from the attic. The aliyah is that the second story.
Uh-huh.
Not just up to the value of the animal, but from any nechasim, any possessions you have to give to pay the nezek shalem. So what we're going to focus on.
Oh,
is not the
stay here?
Well, that door is open.
Ah, okay.
I hope they'll notice.
Is it open?
Chatzi nezek and nezek shalem as a difference between tam and muad, that we've dealt with quite a bit in the past. We've dealt less with the matter of migufo as opposed to min ha'aliyah, from the body as opposed to from the attic. We're going to focus on the matter today of migufo, from its body, and what the implications of that are. So after saying that, as an introduction, we move to chapter 3, Mishnah 10.
Okay.
Chapter 3, Ilana can tell you what page it is.
Yes, I think
in this printing. Chapter Mishnah 3, Mishnah 10. 10.
39.
Wherever I am. Right. Mishnah 10, got it.
And you know what? I meant Mishnah 9.
Okay.
I should have written Mishnah
38.
9. Mishnah 9. At the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And it says, Shor Shaveh Maneh. Shor that was worth 100, shenagach shor shaveh matayim, that gourd and ox worth 200, veina nevila yafa klum, and the carcass is not worth anything, the carcass of the gourd animal, notel et the shor, he takes the shor. In other words, the guy who lost his shor takes the living shor. Now why is that? Well, we understand that the one that was gored is worth 200. The one that did the goring is worth 100. So if the guy who lost his $200 shore gets the goring shore that's worth 100, he's getting chatzi nezek. Mm-hmm. Apparently this was a tam.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets chatzi nezek. Fine. He gets the full
amount
of what
is due to him.
What is due to him. Now, the phrase that's important to us in notel at the shore, he takes the shore. Is that telling us anything over and above the simple fact that he gets the whole value of the shore that was nogeah, because it's only worth 100, and that's what he gets. Notel at the shore.
Does he need to take it physically, kind of grab it?
Right. So perhaps it's not just that he gets the money, he gets the shore itself.
Or he doesn't really have a choice. He can't ask for just the money.
Perhaps that's exactly the point, that he gets the shore itself.
Uh-huh.
And that would connect to what we saw just 2 minutes ago, that tam mishalem migufo. And gufo there from its body would mean now not just only up to the value of the body, but the body itself, not the value of the body itself. He gets the thing itself.
Why would they put that stipulation on it?
I don't know
people
why.
Didn't have money.
But I'm just trying to figure out. So
farmers,
let's put it in these terms. When my shore is killed by your shore, and your shore was a tam,
uh-huh,
the minute that it happened, there's one or of two possible ways to understand what happens the minute that the damage was caused and my ox died. Either you, the owner of the goring ox, owe me chatzi nezek, up to the value of the body of your ox, or I have become an owner of your ox at that moment. And if your ox was worth chatzi nezek, the goof of your ox becomes mine at that moment.
But there is a difficulty. What if your ox, what if the numbers don't sit so well? I mean, what if your ox is worth more than chatzi?
Well, if the goring ox is worth more than half of the damage caused, then perhaps I, the owner of the dead ox, now own that percentage of your ox. It's not just that you owe me the money, but I actually own that percentage of
the
ox.
Body.
So did people make a big deal of this and discuss it a lot?
Well, look at the nafgamina. Look at the practical difference. Well,
yeah, you can't take an ox, and I mean, it's not as liquid as money.
Can you take something that is part of your income or your livelihood from another person?
The law can say whatever it wants. The law could say, I own your dirty socks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the law say,
no, I mean, is it not like in Texas they have something called, what do they call it, that you own your dwelling?
Homestead.
Homestead.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I thought you can't take a sewing machine from a cobbler or from a tailor. Or a recorder from a recorder player.
A music teacher.
Is that what the controversy is?
If somebody takes my piano, I cannot make a living.
What can I tell you? I don't know, but I'm just trying to read the Mishnah.
There's no law like that we have in Judaism.
Not that I know of. There is the law of the mashkon, right, of the pledge, that if you owe me $10 and you pledged your recorder as collateral, right? So I take it, but under certain circumstances, I might have to let you use it. That's true for collateral. But here, in the case which you owe me money, you owe me money. But again, let's get back to the issue. Is it that
but you really put the other person to slavery?
What can I do? Either I own his ox, or I'm owed money by him,
but
he
you
has
also
an obligation.
Lost your ox, which is also your livelihood.
Also, having him owe you money seems more reasonable because you could break it into pieces. You could say, well, this week give me this, and next week give me
not
that.
Not everybody has the money.
Well, I'm not talking about it's reasonable. I just want to understand what the Mishnah means.
If my piano attacked another piano, I don't have the money to buy for the other piano.
Well, but you might have a little bit of money, and then you might make more money, and so you pay it off over time.
Okay, but let's see what the Mishnah says about this.
Okay, I want to hear.
So we saw two sources, now a third source.
Okay.
And the third source is on the sheet that I brought.
Mm-hmm.
A2, Talmud Bavli, Masechet, and I see that I misprinted it. Masechet, it should be.
Ah, it's Masechet.
Masechet Baba Kama Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph.
I was curious what
that word worked. I was curious also. So this is the Gemara on the Mishnah we just read, the third chapter, the ninth Mishnah. And it says as follows. Gemara, Matnitin Mani. Our Mishnah, who? Who? W-H-O.
Who is the author?
Who's the author of the Mishnah we just read? The Mishnah that says, Notel at the shore, he takes the shore.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who lost his shore takes the shore. And the answer is, Rabbi Akiva he. It's Rabbi Akiva. Ditanya, as we learned in a Braita, Yusham Hashur Bivet Din, Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva Omer Huchlat Hashur.
What is Huchlat?
Translation from the beginning. Yusham Hashur Beit Din means will be appraised. Yusham is will be appraised. Will be appraised the shur in Beit Din. That's Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Huchlat Asher, Huchlat means forfeited.
Forfeited?
Forfeited. The ox is forfeited. In other words, just like we suspected, that if the goring ox is worth 100, and the ox that got gored is worth 200, and we're talking about Tam, so the goring ox is forfeited. Now it's owned by the owner of the ox that got killed.
Uchlat like hefker? It became hefker?
No, it means a transfer of ownership.
Ah, like uchlaf?
It's similar to uchlaf, but it's really a separate root. I didn't know that's either until I looked it up in the dictionary. Uchlat ashur. So what we're saying is that when the Mishnah says notel et ashur, he takes the ox, that's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva that says the ox got forfeited. It's not just that the Beit Din gets the ox in order to appraise it and then give out the money, mm-hmm. but the ox itself has been forfeited.
Okay.
Its ownership has been transferred. And then, says the Gemara, b'mai kemifligi. In what are they arguing? Now that word kemifligi, you see the root is pe lamed gimel.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Hebrew word miflaga,
like
which means which means division. And what are they divided?
Mm-hmm.
And what are they divided? What's the argument between them? So the Gemara explains. Rabbi Yishmael savar. Rabbi Yishmael holds bal chov hu vezuzi hu dimisek lei misayik lei. Rabbi Yishmael holds bal chov hu. He is a debtor,
mm-hmm.
and it's zuzim, right? Kesef, money. Who de misayek lei?
And it's misalek.
That he owes him, right?
Ah.
In other words, the minute my ox gores your ox, I owe you money.
Mm-hmm.
The ox is still mine, but I owe you money.
Right.
That's what Rabbi Yishmael says. But Rabbi Akiva savar shutfei ninhu.
Oh.
Rabbi Akiva says, partners they are. In other words, the minute your ox gored my ox, I become a partner in your ox.
So a goring is a way of connecting.
Oh, so beautiful.
I know. Isn't that nice? It's just like engaging
they
with
became
someone
mishpoche.
In a very fierce way.
So if my ox is worth 200 and yours is worth 200, and you gored my ox, your ox that is, so now I get out of this half, which means I own half your ox and you own half your ox.
Uh-huh.
But if your ox was worth only 100 and it gored mine, then I get your full ox because there's nothing left for you. In other words, you get whatever's left after I take my portion of your ox.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
That's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. And that apparently is what our Mishnah holds when it says, no tail at the shore, he takes the shore.
I still don't see why that makes such a big difference. I mean, it's the value of the ox. So what's the big difference between doing that and just translating it into money?
Well, we're going to see all of today's classes just about that question.
Okay, good.
But let me just finish what we're reading. And now it says, V'kimiflegei b'hai kra. And they're arguing in this verse. What verse are they arguing over? Umachru at the Shura Chai v'chatsu at Kaspo. That's what it says in chapter, 35, I think. Verse 35 of chapter 21 of Exodus. They should sell the living ox and divide up its money. That's what the verse says. So, they have two different interpretations of what the verse means. Rabbi Yishmael Savar, Lebedina Kimizahar Rachmana. Rabbi Yishmael holds that to Beit Din is warning the Torah. The Torah is talking to the Beit Din when it says they should sell the ox and divide up its money. The Beit Din sells it.
Oh.
Rabbi Akiva Savar, in the last eight words now, Rabbi Akiva Savar, Lenizak Umazik Mizahar Lurachmana. Rabbi Akiva says, to the one who got damaged and to the damagee is warning to them the Torah. The Torah is telling them to sell it. So, why is he telling them to sell it? Because both of them own it.
Okay, so
the minute that the nezek
taking
happened.
Out the middleman of the Beit Din.
You have a good way of saying it. Right, so they're reading the verse in two different ways, bring the two different conclusions. The point for us is that according to Rabbi Akiva, the person who got damaged immediately and automatically becomes a partner in the ox to the value of the damaged money owned him.
Mm-hmm. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Ishmael are in the same generation?
Yes. Yes.
So you cannot even say conditions are different.
They're at the same generation. And remember, this is only for a tam. It's not for a muad.
Oh, muad is.
It's only for a tam in which we said migufo, from his body.
Not from the aliyah.
But the muad has to be from the
attic. The aliyah.
Right, that has different laws. That has different laws. But there's a special law in the tam, according to Rabbi Akiva, that the nizak gains a certain degree of partnership, of ownership, in the goring ox.
Why? What is really the essence of difference between them?
I mean, what's the nachgemina? What difference does it make? Well, that's the whole thing we'll learn today.
You don't need an appraisal. You just appraise it right then and there with the person.
Yeah.
Well,
really.
Well, wait. You'll see. We're going to read
it
right now.
Is it so easy? You'll tell me that you owe me little, and I'll tell you that you owe me a lot.
Well, we went through all that last week. Yeah.
Now I'm going to read today's Mishnah.
Okay.
And today's Mishnah is the first Mishnah of chapter 4.
Oh, we're still not there.
Okay. We're not in the location.
Tell me what page we're on.
Chapter 4, Mishnah Aleph. 41. Shoshen agach arba v'chmisha shvarim. Zeh achar zeh. Isn't he muad?
Okay, good question.
Because
so, wait a second. Shoshen agach arba v'chmisha shvarim zeh achar zeh. That's the case. An ox that gored four or five oxen, ze ahar ze, this after that. Mm-hmm. And says Ilana, doesn't that make him a muad? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask you the question. Under what circumstances would that not make him a muad?
If the owner was not there? Or if he didn't... He has to be warned in front of Beit Din, no?
Right, it could be that it happened
one
so
after
quickly
the other. Poof, poof,
that
poof.
There was no warning. Mm-hmm. And therefore he didn't become a muad yet. Or with a certain Mishnah we learned already that would give us many other scenario.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
What Mishnah do we learn that would tell us many other scenario in which this doesn't become
that
a muad?
Nobody knows who started the other.
We learned a Mishnah.
Zeh omer shochai zik ve zeh omer lo.
It's the fourth Mishnah of the second chapter. The fourth Mishnah of the second chapter. You need a stapler.
No, I like it better this way if I staple it.
Yes, so tell Mary Beth what page it's on.
31,
okay. So it says, Ezehu tam vezehu muad. Which is a tam, which is a muad? Muad kol she'idu bo shlosha yamim. A muad is any that they gave witness concerning it 3 days. V'tam mishiachzur bo shlosha yamim. And it becomes a tam again if it reversed itself 3 days.
So if it didn't do anything bad for 3 days, it goes back to being good.
Right. I hope women don't marry like that.
So we could have a case in which a shur nagach one day.
But that's stupid.
No. Well, it might. Well, it's not clear. Well, what about Rabbi Meir?
Rabbi
says muad she'idu bo shlosha fa'amim v'tam kol shiu atinokot mishamshim bo ve'ino nogeach. Mimashmashin.
So even then, if three bad reports have come, But then it's standing around and a child can go up and play with it. It's considered
tam?
Tam. Right, but you know what? I was wrong. This Mishnah doesn't help us answer our question. I'm going to cross out that question. And now I understand why Rashi says what he says.
Okay.
Now that I've thought of it. So we're going to see Rashi on our Mishnah today. Okay. I was wrong in going to this Mishnah. It doesn't help us. I was wrong. But if we go to the Rashi that I brought, which is on our Mishnah, he deals with our question, how could this ox that gored four or five times still be a tam? Mm-hmm. Ilana gave one answer, which of course is that it didn't get worn in front of Beit Din. But another answer is Rashi says, Shur shenagach arba v'chamisha uvechulan hayat tam. And for all of them, it was a tam. De mishtalim migufo, that it pays from its body. Vehechi dami, and how so? How could it still be a tam? Kagon, for example, ra'ashor venagach. It saw an ox and it gored. Ra'ashor velonagach, and saw another one and it didn't gore.
Huh.
Ra'ashor venagach. It saw a shore and then it gored. V'har negicha shnia, ra'a bet pamim gimel shor v'lo nagach. And then after it saw it was nogech the second time, it saw another ox two or three times and didn't nagach.
Just because sometimes he's not nagach, that doesn't go with the definition of shor muad.
According to Rashi, it does. So let's just think what Rashi said.
He drank too much of his wine.
As long as there's an interval in which it doesn't nogeach, it doesn't become a muad. So it was nogeach once, next time it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was nogeach a second time, next time it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Nogeach a third time, it's still not on the way to becoming a sure muad because of the intervals. It has to be three times.
Where does Rashi get that?
Rashi apparently got it in order to explain our Mishnah. But wait, there's the point in Rashi that he's about to make.
Mm-hmm.
But Rashi brings up the possibility that a shura can become mu'ad l'serugin, which means alternatively, it could become a mu'ad that it's mu'ad to gore every other ox it sees.
Special kind of muad.
Right. In other words, unreliable. If it was nogeach not, then it becomes that.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes muad for that pattern. And therefore Rashi says, I want to give you a scenario, there's no pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So it never becomes muad.
Mm-hmm.
So let's read the Rashi again.
No.
Yeah, that's what he's doing. Let's read it again from the beginning. Shur shenagach arba v'chamisha, a shur that gored four or five, hyphen, uvechulan hayat tam, and all of them, it's still a tam, the mishtalem migufo, that it pays from its body, heichidami, how so, kagon shura shur v'nagach, for example, it saw an ox and it gored, v'rashur v'lonagach, and saw another one and it didn't gore. V'rashur v'nagach, and saw another one and did gore, v'harnigi chashnia, Rabet
pamim, ogimel.
And then after the second time was nogeach, it saw an ox two or three times v'lo nagach. Why does it make it two or three, not just one? To prevent it getting into a pattern,
exactly,
which would make it mu'ad l'seirugin. And then he says, defilu mu'ad l'seirugin leka, that even mu'ad, alternatively, it doesn't become, because there's no pattern.
Ah.
Deshur ein nasa mu'ad, that a shur never becomes a muad, ela im kain, that's a abbreviation, ela im kain, those three letters, aleph, aleph, chaf, ela im kain, except if, thus, negach, gimel, negichot, b'shlosha, except if it gored the three gorings in three shura kesidran, in three that it saw in order, one, two, three, o shelo kesidran, or not in its order, v'nasam muad l'serugin, such that it becomes a muad for alternatives. Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. But if there's no pattern, then it doesn't become muad at all. V'heicha d'serugin shavim, and only if the serugin are shavim, if the alternatives are in order, There's one yes, one yes, one yes, but it can't be one yes, two yes, three yes.
So if it's predictable, then it's muad.
It's, of course, extremely strange.
So that means it's almost never shor muad, because no shor will follow this strict pattern.
You're probably right. It makes it hard to become a muad.
Yes.
Yeah.
And maybe Rashi feels sad for the farmer, because shor muad is a loss.
Yes. Rashi's getting it from the Gemara. He doesn't make it up. He's getting it from the Gemara. As he says in the last three words, Kidetanya lakaman bepirkin, as we learned further on in our chapter. Last three words. So anyway, all of this knowledge, we need to understand our Mishnah.
Okay.
So back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is the shor shenagach arba'a b'chamisha shvarim ze achar ze. The shor that gored four or five oxen, this after that. And we're going to skip now to the middle of the Mishnah to make it easier. We're not going to continue on in order.
Okay.
We're going to go to where the Mishnah says Rabbi Shimon Omer. Rabbi Shimon says, and he's going to explain this case of a shor that goes on this goring spree. Do you see the place, Rabbi Shimon Omer?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is very complicated mathematically. That's why I went to the board, but we don't have it. Shor shavem atayim, shor that's worth 200. Shunagach shor shavem atayim, that gourd, one that's also worth 200. Vein and nevela yafach chlum, and the carcass is not worth anything. Zeh notel maneh vezeh notel maneh.
Maneh is me'ah?
Yeah. This one gets 100 and this one gets 100. Which apparently means that the guy who owned the goring ox now only owns half of his ox.
Uh-huh.
And the guy who got gored now owns half of the goring ox.
Uh-huh.
According to Rabbi Akiva, we learned that you literally become a partner when you got gored. So now, Chazar v'nagach shor acher shavem matayim. This goring ox, which is owned by two people, now went and gored an ox that's worth 200. So now think what's going to happen.
Oh, each of them loses half of their shor.
Each of them loses half.
Each of
them. So it's a partnership now of three, but not on equal footing.
Exactly. You're good in mathematics. They say that music and mathematics go together.
Yeah.
So if you asked me earlier, what is the nafkamina, what's the big deal about Rabbi Akiva's position, that the guy who lost his shor gets partnership in the living shor, the nafkamina is, the practical ramification is, that even though just 5 minutes ago I lost my shor because your ox gored mine, what happens is I immediately, automatically become a partner in the goring ox, and when it goes and gores again, I lose. I that got my ox gored just 5 minutes ago, I now am responsible when your ox goes and gores, because it's not only your ox anymore, it's also my ox.
It's what we call a tar baby.
So the new gored guy.
Wait a second. What is a tar baby?
A tar baby is a sticky thing that you put your hand in and you try to get your hand out and you start to fight with it and you put your other hand in and before you know it, you are completely stuck.
It's like a quagmire.
Okay. Beautiful image.
It happens.
So now what happens? So this ox that's owned half by me and half by Ilana goes and gores your ox, and your ox is worth 200.
So
our
now
ox is
I
worth
get
200. You get 100.
And you guys both get 50.
And we only have 50 left.
50 each.
Okay, so now, that ox is now worth 50, 100.
Yes.
What happens if it goes and gores again? And it gores an ox that's worth 200.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy that got gored gets 100.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So you have only 50 left.
Mm-hmm. And we have 25.
We each have 25. Mm-hmm. What happens if it happens again?
It just keeps splitting.
It keeps splitting.
Neat.
That's what Rabbi Shimon says. Let's read about Rabbi Shimon.
So that's according to Rabbi Akiva.
That apparently is according to Rabbi Akiva, according to Rabbi Shimon.
Well, both of them.
What I mean is, Rabbi Shimon is basing himself upon Rabbi Akiva's hypothesis, position. So let's just read it. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shor Shaveh Ma'atayim, Shenagach Shor Shaveh Ma'atayim, an ox worth 200, gordon ox worth 200, Vein and Nevila Yafa Klum and Nevila is not worth anything, the cock is not worth anything, Zenotel Maneva, Zenotel Mana, this one gets 100, this one gets 100. Chazar Venagach Shor Acher Shaveh Ma'atayim, it went again. And gordon ox worth matayim, acharon notel maneh, the last one, Mary Beth, gets 100. She gets her half damages. V'shulefanav, and those before, zenotel chamishim, v'zenotel chamishim zuz. Both have 50-50. Chazar v'nagach shur acher, shaveh matayim, it did it again. Acharon notel maneh, the one that got gourd gets the 100. Shalifanav chamishim zuv, the one before it 50, that's you get 50. The shnayim rishonim, and the two early ones, dinar zahav. A dinar is worth a quarter.
But isn't this ox the same one? When does it become what?
Never.
Why not? Because now it is goring every ox it sees. But you're talking about it's not predictable.
We have to assume what Rashi said, either that it didn't go to Beit Din ever, or that there's been intervals that don't let it become.
Okay, so there's a chance that, we all could be
partners.
Happy partners with this crazy ox.
but you say happy.
Well, who's happy about it?
Well, the first
these
people.
Corpses of oxes all over the field. And now, last time we've learned that they're not to be cleaned. Even camels are not to be removed.
Not, you're allowed to remove them, though. We just said there might not be an obligation.
The perfume must be outstanding with all these corpses. That's really a Purim spiel.
The problem here, as far as I see it, is that the people who get gored and automatically get ownership in the ox, they might not even be aware of the ownership. If everything happens very quickly, then 5 minutes after their ox got gored, the ox they now own is goring someone else's ox. They didn't even have a chance to do anything, but still mm-hmm. they suffer. Hear what I'm saying? This
well, they, at least they get something, you know, otherwise
a
they
quarter.
Don't get anything. I mean,
but I would say that if your ox gored my ox, I want my 100, but I don't want to be responsible for the things your ox goes on to do. I want to keep my 100, but according to Rabbi Shimon, my 100 keeps getting whittled down before I have a chance to do anything.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it's a bit problematic, but that's what Rabbi Shimon says based on Rabbi Akiva.
It's now, not a good partnership.
It took me quite a while to figure all this out. I'm quite jealous of you guys that you got it so quickly.
No, because we have a good teacher.
But remember, we are in the second half of the Mishnah.
Mm-hmm.
We skipped the first half.
Okay.
The first half is very, very difficult.
Okay.
Very difficult. So let's read the first half. So we began the first half with the introduction. Shur shenagach arba'a v'chamisha shvarim ze ahar ze. A shur that gored four and five oxen, this one after that one. Yishalem la'acharon shebehem.
That is not according to the tale we just went through.
It's certainly not. It's a different opinion.
Oh, that's Tanakama?
The Tanakama is a different opinion. We read Rabbi Shimon. Uh-huh. Now we're reading what will turn out to be Rabbi Meir. Yishalem l'acharon shebehem. He pays the last one. So if my ox went and damaged 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I basically only have to pay half damage to the last guy. And the other guys suffer. Why? Let's read more. Vim yesh bo motar Yechazir shelefanav.
Motar what?
And if there is an it leftover, he will return to the one before. In other words, my ox gored five oxen in a row. and it didn't become a muad for some reason. So, the last daksit gourd, let's say that my ox that gourd was worth 100, yours that got gourd was worth 200. So I pay half damage, and there's nothing left in my ox. And it was left 100. So the other guys who got gourd by my ox previously get nothing. There's no motar. There's no extra. But let's say that my ox is worth 200, and it gourd your 200 guy. So I pay you 100, and then there's 100 left in my ox, right?
Yes.
I give that 100 to the guy I gourd before you.
Okay.
Let's say, and the other guys who got gourd earlier get nothing. Let's say my ox is worth 300.
Then the one
so the first 100 I give to you, the second 100 I give to the one before, the third 100 I give to one before, and the earlier one gets nothing. It always begins with the last one to get gourd, and then whatever left I give back, going progressively
instead
backward.
Instead of dividing this money.
Instead of any divisions.
Why is that?
And the question is why? The question is why?
Well, and how do you know that the fifth one is the last one?
Right. Witnesses. How do you know? Who says? So let's just read on a little bit. Vim yesh bo motar, after I gave to the second one, yechazia shalifnei fanav, then return to the one that's before that one. Just like I said, vacharon acharon niskar, and the last one benefits. So the last one to get gourd, he gets the most money. I mean, he gets certainly his money. The one before that might or might not. The one before that might or might not. The one before that might or might not, as we said. That's Divrei Rabbi Meir. So the big question is, why? What's the approach of Rabbi Meir? What sense does it make?
Well, I have no idea.
I think, according to Rabbi Meir, the goring, the more chance it is that it's close to being a muad. It's slightly more muad, no?
So what? But so what?
I'm not sure.
If it's muad,
he needs to pay the whole.
Yeah, we're only talking about half this or this whole thing. So here, I brought to help us a little bit the Mechilta of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So I'll tell the story of the Mechilta to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, even though I told it this morning.
Yes, it's a good one.
So let me just show you what this text looks like. Pencil, you see my notes. But you see that there's, in the print, there are handwritten notes. This is a book that was printed with handwritten notes before computers.
Wow.
This book was printed in 1955. So, 1955. Before 1955, the Mechilta to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai didn't exist. It was created in 1955.
Wow.
So, what does that mean? It means as follows. That apparently, in the time of the Mishnah, going back almost 2,000 years ago, there were the Midrashim of the rabbis on the Torah. I'm talking about halachic Midrashim. There's no halachic midrash on the book of Genesis. On the book of Exodus, there's the Mechilta. On the book of Leviticus, there's the Sifra. On the books of Numbers and Deuteronomy, there's the Sifrei. That's what it's called. Now, there are two different Mechilta on the book of Exodus.
What is Mechilta?
Mechilta just means a collection of material, just like the word Mesechet. And both of these are halachic and Tanaitic, right? Halachic, it's not agadic, it's halachic, and it's from the period of the Tanaim. Two different midrashim reflecting two different approaches. There's the Mechilta de Rabbi Yishmael, the Mechilta de Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that's the Beit Midrash Rabbi Akiva, and the other is the Beit Midrash Rabbi Yishmael, two different approaches of halachic Tanaitic midrashim. And
did we have the Mechilta of the
Rabbi Yishmael? Yeah, we've had that all these years. So, during the course of the Middle Ages, the Rishonim quote both Mechiltot quite often. They knew them, they learned them. From the 17th century, and I looked it up this morning, from the 17th century on, we no longer have an extant copy of the Mechilta. of Rabbi Yishmael got lost. It wasn't very often learned. The Babylonian Talmud was learned. The Talmud Yerushalmi was learned. The Midrashim were learned less, especially halachic Midrashim. And apparently, less and less copies were made. And of course, books were always burnt or lost mm-hmm. or damaged. By the 17th century, there's no Mechilta of Rabbi Shmuel Yochai. No one knows about it. No one has seen it. We know that the Rishonim had quoted it, but no one has a copy anymore. It's lost to the Jewish people. 17th century, 18th century, 19th century, 20th century, there's no Mechilta. The Mechilta returned in 1955. Had it returned? So, in 1895, the Cairo Geniza was discovered.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the story
mm-hmm.
a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Salomon Schechter discovered the Geniza. And
is it Salomon Schechter that discovered it?
Of course, not him. He's the first Western man that heard about it.
But they knew about it. I mean, there were people who knew
the Jews in Cairo
was there.
Knew it?
Apparently, they didn't know because they had no longer used it for hundreds of years. But a few people knew there was such a place that had all these papers in it.
It was in a synagogue, in a functioning synagogue?
I don't think it was functioning anymore.
Uh-huh.
In 1895, Salomon Schechter got word of the fact that there was such a Geniza, and he went up there and realized that there is the biggest trove of Jewish documents that ever has been discovered.
Wow. Okay?
So the materials were all carted back to Cambridge, and there wasn't a budget to catalog it. And it took over 50 years.
Wow. Why to Cambridge and not to Jerusalem?
Because that's where he was. He took it to his library. Right? He was in Cambridge.
Did he have to pay for it or he just grabbed it?
I don't know how. I didn't.
There's a book about it. There's a book about the whole. I mean, I'm sure there's more than one.
Yeah. So anyway, gradually the researchers began to find their pages from a long lost Mechilta, mm-hmm. and comparing those pages to the quotes of the Rishonim, who said they were quoting the Mechilta of Rishonim Bar Yochai, they began to realize here are some pages of it. So they began to put the pages together to create a book. And then in the late 1940s, one of the greatest professors of Talmud at the Hebrew University began to actually do what had to be done to publish it. That's Yaakov Nachum Alevi Epstein. But he died before he was able to put it out. So his student, Ezra Etzion Melamed, took the pages his Rebbe had prepared, added handwritten notes, as I had showed you, and published it in 1955 as a book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is probably only half of the original Mechilta.
Wow.
But it's better than nothing.
Mm-hmm. This is which university?
Hebrew University. And when they put it out, when they began to see what this material looked like, they realized that there was a Yemenite midrash from the 10th century called Midrash HaGadol, an anthology that apparently took a lot of its material from the original Mechilta. So they were able to piece together additional lines and pages from the Midrash HaGadol, where they saw it connected to the folios and fragments they had, so they put together this book. Now, from this book, we see a source parallel to our Mishnah that might help us understand the opinion of Rabbi Meir.
Good.
So Midrash HaGadol, that's the one that the Yemenites had?
That's a Yemenite Midrash that is an anthology that apparently is based to a large degree on the lost Mechilta de Rishonim Bar
Yochai. Because they mention here the Midrash HaGadol too.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So
it's a mess.
Yes, it is. It's an exciting discovery. And we're hoping that there's more to be discovered.
It is not yet gone through the whole thing?
They think there's about half of the... No, I didn't mean there's more Geniza material. I meant perhaps in other libraries around the world, they'll discover more pieces.
Wow.
Excuse me.
They can always find more. Isn't that amazing?
So how are we going to understand Rabbi Meir? So now we look at the Mechilta. So here's the Mechilta that I brought on our sheet. Right at the bottom of the sheet.
Got it.
Mechilta Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Perek Chaf Aleph. Mikan Amru Shor Shunagach Arba V'chamisha Shvarim Ze Achar Ze. From here they said, a shor that gored four and five oxen, this one after that one. Acharon Acharon Niskar. The last one wins, mm-hmm. which is what our Mishnah says.
Yes.
This is really parallel to our Mishnah. And then it says, Ketzad. How so? How does it work? Shur yafeh matayim.
This is in the Mechilta itself? Then why is it in brackets?
Well, because they put together this Mechilta text from so many different fragments.
Ah.
And it... One or two possibilities. Either I don't understand the way they edited this, or what I think is more likely, it's not edited in a very clear fashion. They didn't give you clear notes what section they took from which fragment, because mm-hmm. the fragments aren't cataloged. So that every fragment they just put in separate brackets, and they piece together a text.
So they're just telling you there's some possibility that it might not weren't written. I mean, you can just make your own conclusion.
Well, they're telling us this is what they think the Mechilta looked like.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're in the fourth to the last word of the line. Ketzad, how so? Shur yafeh matayim, shenagach shur yafeh matayim. A shur that's worth 200. Gordas shur that's worth 200. V'chazar v'nagach shur acher yafeh matayim. And it came back and gored another shur worth 200. Zenotel mane v'zenotel mane. This one gets 100 and this one gets 100. So it looks like what they're saying is that my shur worth 200 got yours worth 200, and then it got hers that's worth 200. So you get 100 and you get 109 and worth but left with nothing. I lost my shur.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the last two words of the second line. Last three words. Chazar v'nagach shur acher, yafeh matayim. It came back again and gored a shur worth 200. That's the third time it's goring. Acharon notel maneh, v'shelefanav notel maneh, v'rishon mafsid. The last one gets 100, the one before it gets 100, and the earlier one loses his 100. Right,
so come and take it away from you.
Right. So again,
I'm not clear. What are they saying?
So my ox, all the oxen are worth 200. Mm-hmm. Gored your ox, and it gored your ox.
Okay.
So when it gored hers, then I had 100 and you had 100 in mine. And then it gored yours. I lost my 100 to you. So now I'm out of the picture. You have 100, you have 100. The ox now went and gored another ox.
They take mine away.
She loses her 100. You have 100, and the last one has 100.
It's like some kind of weird board game.
In other words, right, it goes in order. I lost mine first, then she lost hers, then you would lose yours if it went in gored again.
So is that like the last example? Like Rabbi Shimon?
No, that's not like Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon went in increments. It went down from 100, 50, 25. This one doesn't go in increments. This one you just lose.
Why? On what are they basing it?
That's the question. In other words, all we have now is a little better understanding of how Rabbi Meir works, but we still don't understand why.
Yes.
But that's apparently how Rabbi Meir works.
Would you be patient enough to explain to me again what... I don't understand the mathematics of that.
Yeah. Again, I own the ox.
Yes.
The goring ox. It gored Mary Beth's ox. And okay. All the oxen are worth 200. It's always Tom. So, of my $200 ox, she now gets $100.
Right. But she's not partner of the ox. She
I don't know. I don't know.
Money?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So then this ox gores your ox.
The first ox.
There's one goring ox. The same goring ox the whole period.
It goes to a third ox now.
It gored her, and now it gores you.
Yes.
Okay, so now...
You're giving me the 100 that
right.
you have left?
Yes, so now she has 100 and you have 100.
Yes.
Now the ox goes and gores another ox.
Uh-huh.
She loses her 100. You keep yours. Now she lost, you have 100, and the one that gored has 100. If it goes and gores again, you lose.
Wow.
But you couldn't enforce that. I mean, you're going to go and take money away from somebody who had... they're not going to give it to you.
That's a technicality.
The
Beit Din tells us the law, and we follow the law.
So the only way you can understand it is if you say that somehow the person who was gored becomes a partner. Because otherwise, why should Mary Beth worry about that other ox?
Okay, so let's say there's a partnership here, and it looks like you're right. But if there's a partnership, why? So now let's say you have 100, you have 100, the ox gores again. Why does she lose her 100? Why don't, if it's a partnership, why don't you each split it 50-50 like Rabbi Shimon says?
Mm-hmm. That's where mm-hmm. I don't get mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, and I don't get it either. Now let's just make it clear that the wording of Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah is not the same wording what mm-hmm. we just read in the Mechilta, but it seems to be the same opinion. Let's see if we could fit what
well,
we read in the
Mechilta. Well, he just leaves out the in between people and says the last person gets it.
Right. What he says, acharon acharon niskar, the last one wins, those are the same words are found in the Mechilta.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And apparently it's the same opinion, it's just explained differently by Rabbi Meir, but the logic of it escapes me.
Mm-hmm. No, but the expression acharon acharon niskar is so unusual that it's kind of very attractive to think that they're basing it one on the other.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's all we know about this.
Yes, so let's just think, what could be the logic here? What could be the logic?
What is Sal Pasu?
The very end, it says...
Meshalmin?
Salik Pasuk. End of the verse.
Ah, Salik Pasuk.
So what could be the logic here?
You hint that Albeck had something added.
Well, this explanation that our Mishnah is parallel to the Mechilta,
that's Albeck.
Now, let me just tell you that when Professor Chanuch Albeck edited this Mishnah, this Mechilta didn't exist yet.
Yes. Mm.
Rather, in his notes, he says, look at the Geniza fragment. He doesn't know about this book yet. Just look at the Geniza fragment they just found.
Oh, he just saw the fragment.
He knew the fragment. He didn't have the book yet.
Wow.
Let's see. Does it say when this was first published? But it must have been right a little bit between 1955. Does it have the first date of publishing here? Yeah, the first date it was published was Tafshin Yud Gimel, which is 8, 9, 10, 5, 48, 1953.
Yes. 1953. And Blackman did it in 1963.
Hey, that doesn't matter.
But he didn't know about that.
So what could be the logic of this approach? Let's just think of it again. So I lost mine. Fine. Now we have two ox. It looks like some type of fine. The more you're fined,
the closer you are to the original, the more you're fined.
Because you were involved in more goring. In other words, Mary Beth, in the order we did it earlier, you have an ox that you have a portion in that gored once and then a second time. The minute it does it a second time, yeah, that's how it works. Now I understand. I mean, I understand a little bit. Right, so let's think of it again. Again, I have this ox. Mm-hmm. Right, Ilana.
I'm trying to see if Blackman comes with a brilliant idea.
No, he doesn't.
You checked it?
I didn't, but I...
you know who to expect
from. So let's just say it again. My ox, gored your ox. Mm-hmm. I lost 100 when... it gores your ox. Now I lose my other 100. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Actually, it doesn't.
Well, it's your ox.
The system, no.
So you lose all the value
the
of that
system
ox.
Of the second system makes much more sense.
I know.
But we're trying to make sense of the
we're
first
trying to make
one.
Sense of it. So the principle is...
The principle is to pay half, right?
Yes.
Where the principle is, no, the principle is that when your ox gores twice, you lose everything. That's the principle.
Mm-hmm.
Because think of it like that.
Oh.
My ox gored once, I lose half. It gored again, I lose the other half.
Mm-hmm.
That's always the principle. Ah, now it makes sense. So then Mary Beth, she has an ox.
Now she owns the ox.
I own half of it, right?
Okay, but again, that is irrelevant.
Okay.
You have ownership in the ox together with me.
Right.
And then it gored once.
Uh-huh.
You lose half. No. Right.
I have ownership in it with Ilana.
I'm sorry.
You
right.
have no longer any ownership in
right.
it.
Okay, right. So, right. When it gores there.
Yes.
I'm finished. I lose everything now.
You're out of the game.
Okay.
Then.
So you're in the game now.
Uh-huh.
And the principle is, if it gores twice, you lose everything. So it gored once.
Uh-huh.
When it gores a second time, just like
I
lost
everything
from twice scoring, so you lose everything from twice scoring.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. So the principle seems to be, two strikes and you're out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But where is it based on something in the Torah? Because you're supposed to only lose half of it each time.
Well, you do only lose half of it.
Well, that's the principle. If you lose
half strikes,
each time,
half and half
so
is one.
So that's what it is. That's what it means, chatzi nezek. The principle of chatzi nezek is that if you gore twice, you lose everything. If you gore twice, you lose everything.
Neat. Who is that intelligent man?
Rabbi Meir.
Rabbi Meir.
So it makes a little bit of sense.
Yes.
Now,
but
the Gemara,
it's not fair because you didn't ask for this to happen to you, but that's just what happens.
Well, life is tough.
Yeah.
Now, the Gemara understands it completely differently.
Okay.
Really?
The Gemara has a whole set of circumstances that tries to understand it differently. The Gemara didn't know this Mechilta that we have, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't aware
so
of it.
So at the time of the Gemara, the Mechilta is lost?
No. Not that it was lost, but the Gemara, it was known, but not to the particular rabbis that were commenting upon this particular Mishnah, apparently.
Yeah.
There are a lot of braitot that are known by some rabbis and not by others. So that's the story for tonight.
Wow.
Neat.
That's very interesting.
Thank you.
And very confusing. I was very confused in preparing this.
I'm not sure how much relevance it actually has for me today.